Evening, ladies and gents. Evening.
Nice to meet you.
Good evening.
How about them Broncos?
I'm not shaking any hands. I'll just wave.
Anybody into wrestling here? As we say back in the colonies, wrestling.
Wrestling.
WWF. See if you can tell me who this is, whose entry. Oh, you know the Nature Boy. Huh? All right, this is the way in my special teams meeting, we always say, give me, when somebody gets I'll ask them a question and they get an answer, right? And I say, okay, give them two claps and a Ric Flair. You know that one? So it's like, woo! All right? So just to get you ready.
Okay, you warmed up.
Give me two claps and a Ric Flair. Ready? Woo! All right.
Which is actually better than our entrance because we walked down there when we've been sat in there for about an hour anyway. So kind of defeated the object. Thank you for coming. We appreciate you being here. Stop number 3 on our tour now. So we've been to Newcastle and Edinburgh last week. We're off to Birmingham tomorrow. Just so you know how it works, we're not recording the entire podcast so we don't have to edit out the abuse. So, but basically, we want you to be involved. So we'll be asking you for questions throughout the night. We can talk about anything you want to talk about. We have Jeff doing some show and tell, a few little games, and we'll get a few of you up to test your football skills and other bits and pieces. So just one other thing I've got to tell you about. This is fantastic, actually. So NFL UK are running this 50 golden tickets thing during Super Bowl week. So go to NFL50goldentickets.com. You can win visits to the NFL Network in LA, the draft in Chicago, a Jags game in Florida, a year's supply of Five Guys burgers. That's up my street. Fancy that. Right, we're going to take some questions then. So how are we going to do it? Because now Jeff got quite particular last week, and he was coaching quite hard, I must admit. So you are forewarned. All right? So when we want you to ask a question, just wait till we've got mic runners around. We want you to take the microphone, give us your name because we're recording this, tell us who you support and how long you've been a fan and why, and then fire away with your question. So that's probably scared everyone into not wanting to ask a question, but you've got to, otherwise it's me asking. Well, you were keen. Right, man there, yeah, you for being brave, go for it.
You listen for the wait for the mic now.
Stand up, okay. Stand up. There we go.
Given the way that Seattle...
Whoa.
Name?
James.
Name and your team?
Seattle.
All right.
Since 1986.
Good man.
Why?
Because Kurt Warner, which is my surname, Warner, was the top running back. And Steve Largent was a great receiver. And,
absolutely.
You know, I was a kid, 13, thinking, yeah, I want to be like him.
All right. What's your question?
Given that Seattle's offense took off in the latter half of the season without Lynch and Graham, do you think that we might dispense with their services in the offseason?
I think Lynch is probably gone. I think Lynch is going to be quite expensive next year for the Seahawks. So they could restructure, but I think they might move on from Marshawn Lynch. It's one of those, we don't know what it was like behind the scenes or in the locker room, but it seemed clear that it was when it was Russell Wilson's team, it got elevated to another level. His game certainly got elevated to a ridiculous level. Even Sunday in a losing effort, he was off his head with some of those throws, he really was. But I think they'll stick with Jimmy Graham. But
I think it'll be interesting. In regards to beast mode, it's tough when you've been the face of a franchise. But the reality of our business is there's a very short shelf life. And particularly for running backs, when it starts to go, it goes fast. And with all the money that he's owed in his next contract, it would take a serious restructuring to have him back. I think they're ready to turn the page. Thomas Rawls is going to be a great young back. And so, again, I think it's the team has now swung from being, you know, Marshawn Lynch's team to now it's you know, not that way anymore. And in regards to Graham, I think probably they'll have to keep Graham for at least another year because you want to see that you got something back for trading an all-pro center to New Orleans.
Certainly a bright future, though, for the Seahawks. I think they'll be back. Let's take another question. Yep, gentleman there on the second row.
I'm Rich. I'm a 49ers fan. Have been since the early 80s, watching them late night on Channel 4. They were just the best team at the time. Enjoyed watching Joe Montana and Jerry Rice, obviously. My question is around protection. So at the moment, you're seeing lots and lots of penalties called on people for pass interference and for various different things that is going against the defence all the time and not against the offence so much. You're seeing silly things like that punter, I think it was the Rams punter, taking a bit of a dive so he didn't get smacked by the Seahawks guy he clocked. And then there's the guys this week, the Broncos, have been having a go at Tom Brady, saying he's a bit of a crybaby whinging to the refs all the time. So is that symbolic of the fact that there is too much protection and people are starting to try and call it and influence the refs and it's becoming a bit, you know, it needs to go back to being a bit harder whilst being safe?
You know, I think, and it's interesting because I'm, quote, a defensive guy. So it's in some ways really difficult for me to watch the game the way it's played now, because there was a day when you had a safety in the middle of the field and Jack Tatum or Ronnie Lott or those guys were really, those guys, you can't play with those guys anymore because of the way the rules have changed. I understand it because, number one, the first most important thing to the league is they have to continue to work to make the game safer for the players, and they've done a great job of that. When you saw Shazier's hit on the running back on Hill from Cincinnati, I think there's more we need to do to take shots to the head and shots with your head completely out of the game. On the other hand, the league needs scoring. It wants scoring. It wants offense because that's what the fans have said they want. I love a 13-10 game. Most fans want to see a 33-30 game. And so that's why the rules are all the way they are now. It's tough to play defense anymore. You know, how many guys saw the Denver Broncos play good defense last week against Pittsburgh? Didn't give up a touchdown until real late. I thought they played their tails off. And then I looked at the stat sheet. They gave up 400 yards of offense. Used to be 400 yards of offense was, you know, you'd score 30 points if you got 400 yards offense.
I think there'd be a conscious effort to take those Vontaze Burfict hits to the head out of the game. But we were talking about the Seattle-Minnesota game, which the week before was a great defensive struggle. So the hit inside of it, I think I still like to see a big hit as much as a touchdown, but it's clear you're hitting from here to here now, which must be tough for a defensive player. The thing that frustrates me is the kind of ticky-tacky fouls in the secondary. I mean, it's so often now you see a pass and you see it broken up, and then I wait a split second expecting to see the flag. It's almost become a natural, and especially on punt returns and kickoff returns, you're almost waiting for the flag all the time. It slowed the game down a little bit. So I think I'd like to see that. I think that balance has gone too far the other way. We were talking last week at the roadshow in Newcastle. When you look, this year statistically was the highest rated in NFL history for quarterback play. There's no Joe Montana out there backed up by Steve Young. It's Austin Davis. It's Jimmy Clausen. I mean, the quarterback play is not a golden age. Yes, there are great quarterbacks around the league, but when you look at some of the people that have started and the numbers they've put up, you have to think it might have been skewed too much one way. Let's take another question. Let's go gentleman right at the back, then I'll get you next, sir.
Donovan, I'm from Tennessee. I actually live here these days. I grew up in Tennessee before the Titans existed.
That's why he's got that Steelers jersey on.
Where in Tennessee?
Chattanooga, Signal Mountain, just outside of there.
My all-time favorite football player is from Chattanooga.
Okay, who's that?
Guy that you won't remember him, because I'm way older than you, but he played for the Baltimore Colts and the Giants and won a Super Bowl with Pittsburgh. A guy named Ray Oldham, who was a defensive back for the Colts. And tragically, we lost him a couple years ago, but that was my guy.
Thanks for sharing, Will. We'll look him up.
All right.
Kind of a follow-up question. How do we fix pass interference? I mean, for me, it's the most frustrating penalty in football. It's the most consequential. You know, I mean, there's talks. Could they theoretically go back to the college rule for just 15 yards? It's such an important penalty, and the fact that it's not reviewable seems ridiculous. I know, what do you guys think about this?
Well, we have experience with it.
That's a good point.
We have experience with it in the Canadian Football League, because we made the move a year ago to make DPI, defensive pass interference, a reviewable call. And it's been tremendous because it really has leveled the playing surface. And, you know, we've had games turn on that very call. Because how can you not give the coach an opportunity on a clearly fouled player to review it when you can review all these other things? Mm. Matter of fact, in our collective bargaining agreement this offseason, there's a move to make offensive pass interference a reviewable call. Because if you watch, and we're going to show you this on the build-up to the games this weekend, Danny Trevathan, the linebacker from Denver's, come out and said, what about Gronkowski? He pushes off all the time. Well, yeah, he does push off a lot. And we'll show you evidence of plays that if they're officiated by the rule, it's offensive pass interference. And Neil gave me a stat today about Gronk.
Yeah, he's got more pass interference, offensive pass interference penalties than 25 teams around the league on his own. So,
isn't that incredible? 25 of 32 teams have less offensive pass interference calls than Gronk does.
Let's take the question from the gentleman on the end here. Yep, you sir. Sorry, Karen.
There he is.
Rob Shakespeare, Raiders fans since the early 90s, the whole NWA ad hair then.
I'm feeling you, mate.
I just wondered what your take was, Coach, on the Raiders situation, because looking from across the pond, it seems like Oakland are doing everything they can to not keep the team. And they seem to be linked with every city that doesn't have a team. You think they'd push, have a franchise, keep them in Oakland. It's where we've been to Oakland, we've seen the passion they've got there, mm-hmm. But why won't they do everything to keep them there?
You know, it's an interesting phenomenon because, Mark is not like his dad in a lot of ways, but he's very much like his dad in this way. Because when you grew up a Raider fan like you and I did, you've known that there's been talk of them moving all over the place forever. And they moved to L.A., then got a city down there. I can't remember what the name of the city was out by San Dimas to actually give them millions of dollars and a place to build a stadium, and then they moved back to Oakland. So it's just part of what goes on with the Raiders. It's sad to me in a lot of ways because the Raiders will always be Oakland to me. And you've been in the stadium. You know what it's like, the mystique of being there, the black hole, the whole deal. And, you know, it's tough for me. Actually, Neil and I talked about this. We did a Raider game, and you look in that one whole side now is tarped off.
Covered up, isn't it?
And it's unfortunate. But, you know, here's the thing that we have to remember as fans, and it's really tough for me, is this is a business. This is their business. And they have a responsibility to their business just like, you know, BT does and, you know, every other business out there. And if they can do better for their business, then it's their prerogative, I guess.
I think one of those cities might be London. They might have a little look at
that. By the way, would you go through that, please, with them?
My whole spiel about London and the Raiders.
Neil's been connecting dots.
Been connecting dots for a couple of weeks now. But I think the fans thing is a key thing. I know they're very passionate, but they are covering up seats in there. There's no stadium plan in place in Oakland. Even if they give them money from the NFL to build a new stadium, they're going to be $500 million short. And Mark Davis, owners don't just throw quotes out there without thinking about what they're saying and what kind of hint or message they're putting out there. And he said that the world is a possibility for the Raider Nation. So I've added up two and two and got 408. Jeff, let's have a look ahead at the NFC Championship game then. So my first question to you, as I look at these two, are these the two best teams in football? Cardinals and... I know you've got the tradition of the Patriots.
You know, I think probably they're the two most talented teams in football across the board. You look at the entire roster of both teams, and it's really difficult to find a weak spot in either team. If you would say, does Carolina have a fatal flaw? It might be the corner number 37, McClain, who I think Bruce Arians will do everything in his power to get Larry Fitzgerald on that kid as much as he can. On the other hand, if you look at the Cardinals, I would have said when they pounded Green Bay the way they pounded them about 3 weeks ago that that team's going to win the Super Bowl. but they have not played particularly well the last couple of weeks. And Carson Palmer's play was alarming in the game against Green Bay. If Sam Shields just catches the play that's there for him on the goal line and at the end of the game, it's a totally different deal. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers and the Packers right now.
Well, I guess when we look at the Patriots, they're there year in and year out, and you get used to being on that stage and what it takes to get that win. And really, Carolina, yes, a couple of championship games, one Super Bowl appearance, but both these teams have shown some chinks in the armor in that aspect, haven't they?
Well, I think it's really interesting. Cam Newton is a phenomenal player, a phenomenal player. And like I say, he does the Superman thing, and they may put his locker in a phone booth. That's how he changes into his uniform. I don't know. But he is as gifted and talented a player as there is in the league. The difference with him is he loves the spotlight. Mm. He gravitates to the spotlight. And when you watched him as a college player, he was the same guy. He raised Auburn up and made him a national champion in his 2 years there. I don't think the stage, no matter what stage it is, will ever be too big for him. That I don't know if I feel that way about Carson Palmer right now. Will he be able to relax knowing that? And again, here's what happens
His own coach came out and said that, didn't he, at the start.
Here's what happens to the player. You're Carson Palmer, and you've struggled through all those years in Cincinnati, and you come back from an ACL, and now you're in your 30s, and you realize that you're not going to have that many more chances at it. You tend to tighten up a little bit, right? And it's hard to go out and just play free. Cam Newton, that's who he is. He's like, you watch him play. I love to watch him play because he reminds me of a bunch of kids playing on the street corner.
Yeah, Cam's got another 10, 12 years. Carson Palmer got his first playoff win at the age of 36. So
when you get to the playoffs, and I will tell you this, it's incredible how different everything becomes. Around the office, it's different. In the locker room, it's different. In this community, it's different. It is a totally different environment. The hitting, the speed of the game, the preparation, the detail, all of it goes up. And it, you know, you say as a coach, every game's the same and you only play 16, so you ought to play them all the same. That's all BS, really, because these guys know what's at stake. And it's not the money. It's the opportunity to say one time in your life, we were not national champions. We were world champions. And that's pretty intoxicating stuff.
What about Bruce Arians? You like the fact that this is a coach who's told his offensive linemen they've been getting their backsides kicked for the last couple of weeks. He openly came out and said, because Carson Palmer scripts the first 15 passing plays, Bruce Arians scripts the running plays, and they kind of mix them all in. And he called him out. He said he was too cautious because Bruce Arians likes to stretch the field, doesn't he, Jeff?
Right. He's a play-to-win guy. I mean, goes actually against...
Well, look at the Hail Mary.
Yeah, commonly held
on the Hail
beliefs
Mary.
In football. He threw the ball. They're trying to run out the clock. They're on second or third down in the Packer game, and he throws a fade. I mean, that was like... Coaches all over the world were like, what? But he said it right after the game. He said, I play to win. I don't play not to lose. Right? I play to win. So... when the Hail Mary play came at the end of the game, his defensive coordinator wanted to play prevent, where they only rushed two guys and they got everybody back there and all that stuff. And Bruce said, hell no, blitz him. Right? Mm-hmm. I love the guy. He doesn't know coach speak. I would think the greatest Super Bowl in the world from a media standpoint is if you had Mumbles over here with the gray hoodie on from New England and Bruce Arians over here. Because one isn't going to say anything, and he might say anything.
Yeah.
Right?
So which press conference are you going to?
And I love the guy. And plus the fact he's an older coach. He was out of football. He got an opportunity. There are only 32 jobs in the NFL and 9 in Canada. There's 41 professional head coaching jobs in all of the world. Right? That's it. That's all there is. So to have one is an incredible achievement and a really special thing. Bruce was out of football and was in his 60s before he got his first chance. And so I think he really relishes the opportunity to do it, like Frank Sinatra said, his way.
Yes, so after a great night in Manchester at Lancashire County Cricket Club, we then moved on to our final stop on our tour in Birmingham.
So we're going to get started with some of your questions to get us going. So when we've got mic runners around, so get the microphone, tell us your name, tell us the team you support. We'd love to know how long you've been a fan and why you support that team. And after all of that stuff, get to your question.
And remember, this part, this is one of the parts that we're recording. So you want to be on the podcast next week, you got to do a great job with your question. So raise your hand if you got a question.
Scared everyone
anything,
off.
Anything.
Who's got the first question for us? Who could get started? Gentleman in the Panthers jersey here. I'll get you next in the Dallas hat down the back there.
Hi, my name's Ian, Carolina Panthers fan, of course.
Stand up. There we go. Everyone see you. Yep.
Just, what influence does Sky TV have on bringing the franchises over here? Carolina Panthers haven't come over yet. Ron Rivera, I've heard, is a bit reluctant to bring Carolina over here. Is there any influence between Sky?
More, no. I'd say that more that kind of stuff, all that lobbying is done by NFL UK behind the scenes. I know that there are more teams interested than end up playing here. There's always that concern that, you know, you might run out of teams that want to play here or have those concerns that coaches might have. The stuff I've heard is to the contrary of that. I would be excited if I was you in the future. I think the Panthers will be a team that comes over in the end.
I've been over a couple of times there, you know, and it costs quite a bit of money.
So it's their turn.
Could be their turn.
Absolutely, it's their turn to come to you.
I don't know, but they might have more money than you. They might.
They might be able to afford it. Thanks for your question. Gentleman in the Dallas hat there.
Hi, my name's Imi. I've been a Dallas fan since about the time they stopped winning Super Bowls, which is great.
Timing.
Yeah. My question was around kind of the new head coaches and wondered who you guys thought might have the best chance to get instant or good success, pretty sharpish.
I think that the best job that was available in this round of coaching changes was the Dolphins. Because the Dolphins, you look at the Dolphins roster, Dolphins have players. Now, they didn't play up to their potential, Sue on down, right? But the Dolphins have players. And the number one position, if you're a head coach and you're going after a job, the most critical position is, do you have a quarterback who can win for you? Mm. And I think Ryan Tannehill can be that guy. And so I think that that Adam Gase is the perfect choice there. He's a great quarterback coach. He's had success with every quarterback he's ever worked with. He came up through the ranks as a student assistant for Nick Saban at Michigan State, then LSU, then jumped into pro football. He's been around great coaches his whole career. And I hear nothing but good things about him from a friend of mine who worked with him on the Bears staff. So I think Miami.
And I think the Dolphins think that Tannehill still has something to offer, which is why they've gone so-called quarterback whisperer to see if they can bring out the best in him, because they've certainly invested in him financially. Let's take another question. Let's go Vikings fan in the front row.
My name's Pete. I've been a Vikings fan since I was 11 years old. Question's about a London or a UK franchise. Obviously, you've been successful coming over here for a long time now. I think with a weekly game, how long do you think it'd take for the novelty to kind of wear off week in and week out? And how would the dynamics work with teams coming over week in and week out with like bye weekends and such forth?
I think, should I go first on this? And then I think if you are looking at having a franchise, I always point to the stadium in Tottenham that's being built. I don't think you'll be filling 83,000. I don't think any team in the NFL really outside of Jerry Jones wants to fill an 83,000 seat stadium. Everything new that's being built is in the 60 range. That's what Tottenham would be. So I think from that aspect, I think you got longer before that novelty kind of wears off. I actually think it'll be the reverse. I think it will actually kickstart even more. And not, I know everyone here's got their jerseys on, but you know, as a franchise, if a franchise came into the UK, then I think more people would be drawn into the sport just because it's right on your doorstep. The logistics sort of stuff you hinted at, I don't know how it would work with the teams, how they come over and how often they come over. I actually still believe that if there is a franchise here, they would be based as a company or as a playing staff. I think they'd be based on the East Coast of America because I think you have free agent tryouts every Tuesday, Jeff. I mean, that's the bottom of a roster is constantly churning. How can you have tryouts sending people over to London? So that part of it, I think, would still be based in America, but it's all speculation for now. Let's have another question. Let's take gentleman right at the back. Yep.
My name's O'Hill. I'm a fan of the Birmingham Lions. just wanted to say about Johnny Manziel, how you think like his attitude as a player and like all the situation around him, and what you guys think about that.
I'm gonna go first. Johnny Manziel.
You know, it's
his attitude as a player, did you say? His attitude, yeah.
It's really a shame because his inability to sort out what's really important may have cost him a career. Do I think he's a good enough player to play in the National Football League? Yes. Right? I watched him as a college player at A&M. I think he's got phenomenal ability. He's got some liabilities. Not big. He doesn't have a big arm, all that stuff. But there have been other quarterbacks that have played and played really well in the NFL without big arms. Drew Brees is one of them who's not very big. But what he couldn't get his head around was the fact that what it takes to be a pro. There's a lot of guys that are professional football players that aren't pros. Then there's the true pros. And Johnny Manziel hasn't figured out how to be a pro yet. And until he does, I don't think he'll be a player.
Yeah, I think when you look at, you know, all the way he entered the NFL, I didn't really like all that. I think that was kind of too much flash before you saw any substance there as well. And I'm with Jeff. I think you've got to put the work in. I don't know too much about how Cam Newton works in the building, but I know that Carson Palmer's a absolute film junkie. Tom Brady's the same way, and Peyton Manning, we all know about that. Three of those four are in the championship games this weekend. So you've got to put in the work away from the field. Let's have another question. Yeah, gentleman in the Gronkowski shirt.
Hi, I'm Phil. I'm New England fan. With the Rams moving to LA, is there going to be talks about relocating the conferences to get it more balanced rather than being a lot of travelling East Coast more than on the West Coast?
I haven't heard much about that. I would say that they've not shied away from that in the past. I think it would have been more of a concern if the Chargers and Raiders had ended up sharing that stadium. I'm not sure if they'll really worry about that for this. They're out west, aren't they? They're in the west.
One individual move, right? Who do they play? What division are they in? In the west, right? So it actually is moved back home.
Yeah.
So all those traditional west rivalries are intact because they've basically gone back where they came from.
Where's the gentleman with the Seahawks? Did you put your hand up, sir? You put your hand down now. He doesn't want one now. You then, sir. There, yeah. Just one sec.
James, a Bills fan for about 4 years now. I just want to know how you guys feel about Rob Ryan joining up with Rex at the Bills.
Jeff's happy.
Has the defensive coordinator got to worry about his position now or look over his back at the very least?
Well, I think I know Rob very well. As a matter of fact, Rob worked for me once upon a time. And I know Rex, not as good as Rob, but I know Rob extremely well. Rob's very – it's unfortunate because – the media has portrayed Rob in a way, and frankly, Rob's let himself be portrayed that way. But he's a very smart man and a very good football coach. Now, my understanding is what's going to happen in Buffalo is Dennis Thurman's going to go to the secondary and work in the secondary, and Rob is actually going to run the defense for Rex, which will be good because if you watch the Bills play, you could see that they really weren't sure. And it's a very complex defense. It takes time to learn it. You know, when Dick LeBeau was at Pittsburgh, Joey Porter told me that, Jeff, he said, you got to understand it takes 3 years to learn the defense for a young linebacker. It's kind of the way it is in Buffalo. So they will get better, and they will get their own guys in there. And it's not surprising to me that Williams is going to be out of there. But they'll get guys that can play. They've done it their whole career. I think it's a good move. Plus, he's 45 minutes away from me. I can see him a lot more.
I guess Rob's going to be sensitive to, and this happens all the time with coaches that move around, but he's going to be sensitive to not treading on people's toes because when he was in New Orleans, Dennis Allen came in, didn't it? And now Dennis Allen has kind of usurped him.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny thing in coaching because you got to understand there's 15 guys usually on a staff, 14 or 15, and they're all guys with strong egos. You have to have a strong ego to get to that level of coaching and to coach in that league. So sometimes the mechanics of a staff, what kind of culture you build within your staff is really, really important. Mm-hmm. Now, I think in Rob's case, it's a little different because his brother's the head coach, and
you know, they're twins, by the way. So it's really a unique situation that the two twins, I think it's the first time it's ever happened in NFL history.
Let's talk about the, what an athlete, look, I've come untucked and everything. Let's talk about the NFC Championship game then, Jeff, and make our picks. The Arizona Cardinals at the Carolina Panthers. I ask you this first. Are these the two best teams in football?
I think right now they're the two best football teams. You look at the rosters, there's not a weak spot on either of the rosters. The places where I think that Arizona has a chance against Carolina, I think they got to find a way to make McClain the corner, 27. They got to go after him and try and get fits on him. And then inside, if they can make Roman Harper cover, they got a chance. Right now, they're that kind of team because you look at them and they've got John Brown, they've got Michael Floyd, they've got Fitz, and their tight ends and their backs can all catch. Right? They're going to need Carson Palmer to play a lot better than he played in the first game. They're not going to get away against Carolina. Carolina, if you go into the Carolina locker room, that's where the DBs all dress right there. There's a big sign that says Thieves Alley, all right? Because they are thieves. They steal the football. They lead the NFL in interceptions. And the balls that he threw, that ball that he threw out to Sam Shields on the goal line against Green Bay, right? Shields catches that ball, game's over. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers right now, right? But Carolina won't give him second chances. So he's got to clean his game up, and he's got to play a much better football game. They can win that game if they do. If they turn the ball over, they can't win.
It's interesting with both these teams because we talked about the Patriots and their kind of been there and done that mentality. And both these teams haven't been on this stage, you know, as many times. They're two teams who've never won the Super Bowl. And so you mentioned the shaky start that Arizona had a little bit last week. Carolina, the opposite. They race out the blocks and, as they've done a couple of times this year, kind of get pegged back where they still win. So that's what it's all about. But that will be interesting to see how they handle the big stage, because we've talked about that Cam just looks like he loves the big stage, right?
Nobody was born for big moments more than Cameron Newton. He is, has been his whole life, a guy who just at, when you need a play and you need a big play in a big game, check his history. And there's no greater predictor of the future than the past. And his past will tell you. National championship at Auburn, he put Auburn on his back and carried him to the national championship. Right? He's doing the same thing in Carolina. He's making a bunch of players that aren't great players. They're good players. There's no bad players in the NFL. But Philly Brown is not a class of the league wide receiver, right? Ted Ginn's failed three or four places, right? Jericho Cotchery is a cast-off from Pittsburgh. The one really good threat he has is Olsen. And it was interesting, I heard Arizona say they're going to do everything in their power to take Olsen out of the game. Not Ginn, Olsen. So you may see Patrick Peterson on Olsen, and that'll be interesting.
Two good defenses as well.
Two defenses
that do what you talked about right at the start, is take the ball away.
And completely different styles of defense. Arizona blitzes more than any team in the NFL. Almost 47% of the time on pass downs, they come after you. They can run like crazy. They've got good secondary players. They're a team that can match up and make Carolina beat them left-handed. Because I think they'll put 8 or 9 guys around the line of scrimmage, and they'll have a guy assigned to Cam every down. Now, that means they're going to have to throw it good enough. They're going to have to throw it enough to win the game in Carolina.
The games like this, can they turn on, you know, 2 or 3 plays, a turnover, or like you mentioned, an Arizona blitz? Cam Newton threw the most touchdown passes of any NFL quarterback this year against the blitz. So it could just be a handful of plays, because it feels like there's not much between these two teams.
When you talk to coaches, and one of the things that you learn very quickly in the business is big games particularly always come down to 4 or 5 plays. There's 4 or 5 plays in a game that are going to determine the outcome of the game. The challenge is you never know when those 4 or 5 are. And that's true in every you go back through any championship game, and it's always that case. Seattle gets an onside kick against Green Bay last year, or we're not even talking about them in the Super Bowl. Malcolm Butler makes an unbelievable play in the Super Bowl, or, you know, the Seahawks are – back-to-back champions. Mm. So it really comes down to just a very few critical plays. And when this is the key thing, I think, Neil, when you get a chance to make a play, you got to make the play.
Right. We've seen teams that haven't done that, and they're not in the competition anymore.
You
they're
can't
out.
Leave,
yeah.
You can't leave plays on the field. Happened to Kansas City. Four times they dropped Brady passes on defense. Four in a game. You're not going to win. You can talk about clock management all you want, but it's not the clock management. It's four turnovers you had in your hands and dropped.
I think one of the greatest things about the playoffs is you just have players like Jeff Janis last week who come out of nowhere, and Chris Matthews in the Super Bowl last year. There's always seems to be somebody who steps up, and they might disappear again. David Tyree did it as well. But last year I was on the sidelines for Sky for the Super Bowl, and Malcolm Butler makes that interception, and the place is going wild, and there's all the confetti's coming down. They're like, they're coming to you in 10 seconds, Neil. And all I was doing was trying to find my roster to find out who the heck Malcolm Butler was, because we'd not heard of him really all year. And that happens at this time of year, Jeff, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a phenomenal documentary that if you're a Patriot fan, you got to watch it. But there's a phenomenal documentary. I think you can actually get it off YouTube if you don't have NFL Network. It's about the Patriots. It's called Do Your Job. And it's basically the saga of that leading up to that game and how they actually show in practice them working against that route, and they score every time. And then when the big moment came, he made the play because he'd done it in practice. And it's what Bill Belichick is the best coach in football, bar none, and it's because his teams do exactly what they're told to do, coached to do.
All right, so we both picked New England in the AFC Championship game. I'm going to go Carolina with the home field advantage. They haven't lost at home all year. What about you?
I'm taking Arizona. I know it's not a popular pick, but it's my pick because I am a big Bruce Arians fan, and I just believe that defense is going to make it really tough for Cam.
All right, let's check with our audience. Panthers fans, any Panthers fans in? So keep your hand up if you think you're going to win. Everyone confident. Now, this would be interesting yesterday. Any Arizona Cardinals fans? You're the first one on our entire tour. Start a fan club. Get those numbers up. Right, so we are out of time. Jeff will take over with our little goodbye in a minute as the coach in the room. But I just want to say on behalf of myself and Jeff, we've really enjoyed being able to do this tour. We couldn't do it if you guys didn't come out. So we appreciate every single one of you coming out, because it's allowed us to be up here talking more football. So from myself and Jeff, thank you very much.